ashram? Why not the banks of a river? Why not some quiet place? Why did he choose the battlefield? So we have to look at what is the allegory of the battlefield, and that we will understand in today's verses. So the very first verse we looked at was Dharma Chetre Kuru Chetre. This blind king, Dhritarashtra, asking his charioteer Sanjaya, what is happening on this battlefield? So where is this battlefield?
Kurukshetra,
which is how far from Hastinapura?
100 kilometers.
About 100 kilometers north of Hastinapura. So by telling Sanjaya, tell me what's happening on the battlefield, how is Sanjaya able to tell him what's happening on the battlefield? Sanjaya is sitting with him in Hastinapura. So how is Sanjaya going to tell him what's happening in the battlefield? Have you thought about that? He's asking Sanjaya, you tell me what's happening in the battlefield. Battlefield is 100 kilometers away. How is Sanjaya going to tell him what's happening there? He had divine vision. Sage Vyasa was there, and he told the blind king Dhritarashtra, because Vyasa was a very realized person, so he had a lot of powers in him. So he told Dhritarashtra, the blind king, I can give you this Divya Drishti. Drishti means sight, Divya means divine. I can give you this divine sight that by sitting here in Hastinapura, not only can you see what is happening in the battlefield, but you can also hear what is happening. And not only can you hear what is happening, but you could also enter into the minds of every soldier and know what they are thinking. That powerful is this divine drishti. But the blind king said, I do not want this divine drishti. Why? Here is a blind man being offered the sight to see, but he says, I don't want that. Why is that? Because Dhritarashtra knew that his children are going to die on the battlefield, that this they are doomed for death because they are standing on the side of Adharma. Dhritarashtra himself says Dharma Chetre. He knows very well that this whole battle is going on in the field of Dharma. And because his children are standing for Adharma, he knows that they are going to be totally destroyed. But he could not stop them. He was powerless. And also because of his attachment, his love for them, that he could not even bring himself to correct them also. So he allowed them to do whatever they wanted. So he says, Dharma Chetre, and he didn't want to see the destruction of his own children. So he says, okay, you give this Divya Drishti to Sanjaya. Sanjaya will sit here and he will relate to me everything that's going on in the battlefield. So who is Sanjaya? He is Dhritarashtra's charioteer. And by default, Sanjaya also becomes the very first war correspondent. Nowadays, we have CNN. Those days, they had what channel? MNN, Mahabharat News Network. So, he became the world's first war correspondent. He is telling Dhritarashtra what's happening on the battlefield. So now, what is the allegory of this battlefield? Dharma Chetre, Kuru Chetre. If we look at this battlefield, Dharma Chetre, Kuru Chetre, what does it represent? Physically, it's a battlefield. It represents a battlefield. But allegorically, what does it represent? Therefore, where is our battle? In the mind. This represents our very mind. So just like Dharma Chetre, this battlefield, on one side of the battle, who was standing there? The Pandavas. What do the Pandavas represent? They represent Dharma. On the other side of the battlefield, you have the Kauravas, who represent Adharma. So therefore, this battle is between Dharma and Adharma, and this battle is nowhere but actually in our minds. So Dharma Chetre, Kuru Chetre physically is there, but allegorically it represents our mind. So our mind has a constant battle between Adharma and Dharma. What is the right thing to do? What is the wrong thing to do? Constantly there is some battle going on. On one side is the attractions of the world, on one side, what is adharma in our mind? Adharma is represented by all the negative qualities: greed, anger, passion, desire, lust, envy, jealousy, ego. So just like, how many Kauravas were there? 100 Kauravas. There are 100 negative tendencies in our mind. Many, many negative tendencies. And how many Pandavas were there?
Five.
What do the five represent? The five senses. Our five senses are pulled left and right by all the negative attractions. So it is our own battle. This Dharma Kshetri, Kuru Kshetri, you can argue whether it happened, didn't happen, doesn't matter. What's most important is today, what is our Dharma Kshetri, Kuru Kshetri? How can we discipline our mind to keep on the path of Dharma and stay away from Adharma? That is the message of the Bhagavad Gita. So in these few verses, we are going to see that Dharma is represented or manifested by no other than Arjuna. And the very personification of evil here is represented by Duryodhana. So we are going to see now the psychological effect of a person who is adharmic, who has done many evil things in his life. Now he comes to the battlefield, he is facing the greatest challenge. What is that psychology? What is Duryodhana going through? Then we will also see what is Arjuna, who is the dharmic person, what is also he going through also. So the very first chapter deals with this psychology of both Duryodhana and Arjuna. So now let us look at the second verse, because now Dhritarashtra has asked, Dhritarashtra has asked Sanjaya to tell him what is happening on the battlefield. So now from verse 2 onwards, Sanjaya starts his report. So now this is what Sanjaya is saying in verse number 2. Sanjaya Uvacha means Sanjaya said, Drishwa tu Pandavanikam. Drishwa means, he says, who saw the Pandavas? Here the word Raja is used in the fourth line of verse 2. The word Raja here refers to this Duryodhana. So Sanjaya is telling his blind, the blind king, that your son Duryodhana, he saw the Pandavas, they were assembled there. Okay? Now, they were assembled in battle formation. How do we know? Because the word Vyudham is used. Vyudham is a kind of a battle formation where the commander allocates different positions to different soldiers. So over the 18-day period, various types of Vyudhams were used. There is called a turtle Vyudham, there is a kind of formation, there is called the arrow Vyudham, all kinds of Vyudhams were there. So the commanders moved the soldiers around in order to challenge the other side. So now Duryodhana is seeing the army of Pandavas, they are ready now, they are assembling in the right formation. So what is the feeling of Duryodhana now? Who has got the bigger army? Pandavas or Kauravas?
Kauravas
have how many battalions? 11 battalions, 11 Akshonis. Pandavas have 7 Akshonis. They are already outnumbered 1 to 2. Now Duryodhana has got a bigger army. He's got a more well-trained, equipped army. Why? Because the Pandavas were 13 years in exile in the forest. They didn't have any chance to train the army. Whereas Duryodhana was in the palace, the army was in the palace. They had ample time to train themselves up. This handphone is there. So, now, with Duryodhana having a big army, a well-equipped army, yet there is so much of insecurity. So, what does this tell us now? What does this tell us? Why is Duryodhana so insecure? Guilt is there. Adharmic person. He knows that he is standing on the side of Adharma. He knows the Pandavas are the righteous people. So, yet the ego is there. He, like, people know they have done wrong, but the ego is there, don't want to admit that they have done wrong. But yet, he doesn't want to show that, that he has done wrong. But inside, the guilt is there. So, here we are going to see how he expresses that guilt. He is so angry. He's so afraid. So many emotions is going through. Feeling of insecurity, feeling of fear, feeling of worry and anxiety, how do we know? He goes to his guru. So here in verse number 2, you see there, Acharyam Upasamgamya. He sees the Pandavas arrayed in battle and he approaches his guru. Who is this guru? Also very important for us to know. He's called Dronacharya. The name of the guru is Drona, and Acharya means he is the guru. And who is this Dronacharya? Dronacharya is the one who taught warfare to both the Pandavas and the Kauravas. So he was the guru of both the Pandavas and the Kauravas. But because he was from Hastinapura kingdom, he had no choice but to support Duryodhana. Although Duryodhana knew that who was Dronacharya's favorite pupils?
Arjuna.
Dronacharya loved Arjuna. He was very fond of Arjuna, and this is irritating and causing insecurity also to Duryodhana, because although Dronacharya is standing on his side, he knows that his loyalties actually lie on the other side. So he goes to his guru Dronacharya and he mocks him. He is very sarcastic with his guru. So what does he tell him in the verse number 3? He says, Pashyetam Pandu Putranam. Look at the Pandus there. Look at the Pandavas there. And who is the commander of the Pandava forces, the chief commander of the Pandava forces? Here he mentions, Tava Shishyena. It is your disciple. He is telling Dronacharya, you know, look at the biggest mistake you made. You trained up this disciple of yours called, this Shishya is no other than Drishtadyumna. So, you all know who's Drishtadyumna?
Draupadi's father.
No. Draupada's son. Son of Draupada. Drishtadyumna. Draupada. Drishtadyumna was by a boon. His father had a problem with this Dronacharya. So by a boon he was born to kill Dronacharya. And this Drishtadyumna approached Dronacharya and said, can you teach me warfare? Now Dronacharya knew that he was born as a boon to kill him. Yet by rules of law, what they call Dharma Shastra, he had no choice but to teach him. Because when a student surrenders to you, you have to impart knowledge to him. So now Dronacharya has given all the knowledge of warfare to Drishtadyumna. So here, Duryodhana is telling him, look what a ironic situation it is. You thought this person, now he's standing on the opposite side. He is the commander of the Pandava forces and he is going to use that knowledge to destroy us. So, you know, it's like this. When a person is insecure, who started the war? Did Dronacharya won the war? Who wanted the war? Duryodhana. He instigated the war, he brought everybody to the battlefield, but now he's trying to put the whole blame of defeat onto the guru himself. You know, this is very common when nowadays in family, the father, when the son does something wrong, who does the father blame? Mother. See, it's your son only, you know, like that only. But when the son brings good marks, A grade marks, then what he says?
My son.
So, same thing now. Here, the insecurity of Duryodhana is showing in trying to blame his guru for this whole disaster. Telling him, you trained the Pandavas, you gave them all the secrets of warfare. Now look, they are going to use it all against us. So here we are looking at the psychology. And now, the most interesting thing in verses 4, 5 and 6, these three verses, Duryodhana is going to mention the names of the opposite side warriors. Now, he mentions a total of 17 warriors. It's not necessary for us to know the names or to go into all these 17 warriors because there are a lot of stories in the Mahabharata. And what we need to know now is by mentioning all these 17 warriors, what does Duryodhana somehow add in? He calls these warriors as Sura. You see in verse number 4, the first line, the word Sura. Sura means they are very brave people. They are very glorious people. Imagine, here we are, instead of praising our own team, who do we praise? We go and praise the opposite team. So it shows the kind of insecurity and the kind of worry and anxiety that Duryodhan already had. He is just expressing it out. On top of calling them Sura, he calls them Maheshwasa. You see in verse number 4, Maheshwasa. Maheshwasa means they are great, what you call, archers also. So they are very great with their bow and arrow. So he is praising all these warriors as Sura, as Maheshwasa, and later on he also calls them another word in verse number 4, last line, Maharatha. Maharatha is for a soldier or a warrior who can single-handedly fight thousands of people. So when a soldier can single-handedly fight thousands of people, he is given the title as Maharatha. So here Duryodhan goes on praising and praising and heaping so much of praise onto the Pandavas. And he names 17 warriors in the verses 4, 5 and 6. So we can already see the psychology of what you call of Duryodhan. Okay. Now having named all these 17 warriors in the 3 verses, okay, what happens now? And he is also insulted and being very sarcastic with his own guru. He realizes that I need the support of Drona also, because Drona is standing on our side, so I should be careful also not to insult him. So what does he do now? In verse number 7, he now addresses Dronacharya as Dvijotama. You see verse number 7, second line, the word Dvijotama. Dvijotama means twice born. So what is twice born? What do you mean by telling somebody you are born twice? Sorry? Initiation. Where is our first birth? Physical birth in the womb of the mother. So the first birth is in the womb of the mother, and the first teachers are our parents. The second birth takes place when the child goes to a gurukul and he then learns the knowledge, that is knowledge of the world, knowledge of what you call spiritual knowledge, both the knowledge, and therefore his guru now becomes the teacher. So when he finishes the initiation period, he is given the white thread to wear, and thus he becomes a, he takes, it's said to take a second birth, so Dvijotama. So means one who has gone through the scriptures, one who has gone through the proper process of learning, and that person is called Dvijotama. So now Duryodhan quickly realizes that he has insulted and been too sarcastic with his guru. So to kind of like butter him, you know, uncut, you know, what we call in Malay. So he now addresses him as Dvijotama. Okay. Now, since he has told about 17 warriors on that side of the Pandavas, he has praised them as Maheshwasa, as Maharatha and all that. Now, let us see how he talks about his own army. So he's telling his guru now, now, for your sake, I'm going to tell you who are the great warriors also on our side. So here, he uses the word tu. If you see in verse number 7, the word tu is there in the first line. It means but, because now he also wants to say that we also are, you know, we are also not that less off. We are also quite great. We have a lot of great warriors on our side. But how many warriors can Duryodhan name on his side? On Pandava side, he has named 17 warriors. When it comes to his side, in verse number 8, he can only name 7 warriors. He can't think of any other people who are great. And not only he just named 7 warriors, but the worst thing is, he doesn't even call them any superlative names. Whereas that side, he called them great warriors, they are great archers, they are Maharathas. Here, in verse number 8, he can't even think of any of the greatness that they did also. So again, all his sense of insecurity are boiling out in him, right? And he is getting more and more depressed. Actually, he is falling into a depression himself. And we will see later that what Bhishma Pitha does to get this Dronacharya out of his depression. So now up to then, he has named the warriors and he concludes in verse number 9 that there are many other heroes. He can't think of the names, but he says there are many other people, and they are equipped with various weapons and missiles, and they have staked their lives for me. Now again, this statement that they have staked their lives for me. Do you realize what it means? A very simple statement is made, that they all come here prepared to give up their lives for me. Means what? He says they all come here to give up their lives for me. Means what? They all going to die, which means what? He doesn't even have confidence in his own victory. So all these fools are going to die only. That means he himself has no confidence over the victory. He doesn't say they've all come here to fight for the victory for me. He says they've all come here to give up their lives for me. That means he himself is not confident that he's going to win this war itself. Right? Now, very important point here now, in verse number 10, to know the psychology of Duryodhana here. He makes a very alarming statement to Dronacharya. He says, that army of the Pandavas commanded that army of ours commanded by Bhishma Pita is insufficient. And that army of the Pandavas guarded by Bhima is sufficiently equipped. Now, we saw that actually the Kauravas have 11 Akshonis. Do you know what's the size of one Akshoni? What is the composition of one Akshoni means battalion? What is the composition of one battalion? 21,870 chariots. When we say chariots, means there must be a soldier also on the chariot. So one battalion has got 21,870 chariots. Plus 21,870 elephants. Means elephants also, there's one soldier sitting on every elephant. Okay? Plus 65,610 cavalry. Cavalry means horses. So you have 65,610 people sitting on horses. Plus 109,350 infantry, meaning foot soldiers. Now, if you total all this up, you will get 218,700 is just one Akshoni. 218,700. In fact, very strangely, all these numbers add up to 9 again. And I told you what is the significance of 9. Did I tell you that? No, I didn't tell you that. See, this number 9 is the root of all the 18. We see how many chapters in the Gita are there? 18. How many battalions were on the battlefield? 18. And 18 is a very, what you call a very spiritual, a very significant number. It comes from the root 9. As you all know, the 9 multiplied by anything will be, give you back to 9. You know that, right? 9 times 9, 81. 8 plus 1 is 9. What you call, whatever, 9 times 5? 45. 5 plus 4 is 9. So, 9 is, you multiply by anything, it comes back to 9. Now, what is the significance of 9? Why is it so spiritual? Why is it so significant in our spiritual Hinduism? 9 represents the total creation. So, how does 9 represent the total creation? 5 are the elements. What are the elements? Earth, water, air, fire, ether, space. Okay? Ether, air, fire, water, space. Now, in this also, do you all know why when we do arti, we use fire? Why don't we use water? Why don't we use earth? Do you all know why do we use arti in why do we use fire in our arti? Why? What? It disappears.
It burns
into nothing. If we look at the elements, what is the most, when creation started, it started with the most subtle element, and each element became more and more gross until the total creation came. So what is the most subtle out of the 5 elements?
Ether.
Okay? Now, ether represents sound. Right? Now, from ether came the next more gross element?
Air.
Then from air comes, air represents, I think it's touch, if I'm not mistaken, touch. Then from air came
fire.
Okay. And then from fire came
water.
And from water came
earth.
So now, if we look at it, this is subtle. Can you see space? Can you see air?
No.
You can't. Can you see fire?
Yes.
Yes. So, what does this tell you now? Why we use fire? As the unmanifest comes into manifestation, what is the first sign that it comes to manifestation?
Fire.
That's why we use fire. So, from the unmanifest, as it is coming to manifest, the first sign of manifestation, what we can see is fire. So, what is this symbol 9? It is the five elements. Five elements plus mind plus intellect plus ego or ahamkar, that is 8, right? 5, 6, 7, 8. And all this is called matter. Or in Bhagavad Gita or Upanishads, they call it Prakriti. Now, what is the nature of matter? What is the nature of matter? It is perishable, but okay, what else is the nature of matter? It occupies
space.
What else? It can change, okay, it is subject to change. What else? It is totally inert. It has no life of its own, isn't it? This even science also accepts that ether, air, fire, water, space, or everything that comes under matter has got no life of its own. So this body is made out of the five elements plus mind, intellect, ego. But what is the life-giving principle? That is called Atma. Or here is Prakriti, this can be called also the Purusha. So therefore, the whole creation is nothing but 8 plus 1, 9 is the total creation. That means everything in creation has got these 9 elements. So that's why 9 is a very significant, a very spiritual number. So now, the thing is, here, as I said, one Akshoni is 218,700 soldiers. If you add up 218,700, you will get 9 soldiers. So if you take 218,700 soldiers for one battalion and multiply these by 11, how many soldiers were standing on the Kaurava side? Any mathematics teacher here? 2.4 million, approximately. So you have the Kaurava's army, 2.4 million people. Pandava's 7 Akshonis, multiply 218,700 by 7, you get approximately 1.5. So 2.5 million versus 1.5 million. Yet Duryodhan says what? That army is bigger, more equipped, more efficient, more sufficient. Ours is insufficient. So all these are the psychological rantings of a person who has a lot of insecurity. Understand that he is on adharmic side. Yet because of his ego, he doesn't want to back down. And do you know, after the whole Mahabharata 18 days war, there are total of 3.9 million soldiers on both sides. After the 18 day war, how many people survived?
11.
Only 11 people survived.
Some say
7. Seven. On the Pandava side, there were 5 Pandavas, Krishna, and there was one more warrior. 5, 6, 7. I have the names here somewhere. Now, 5 Pandavas, and there is Krishna, there is Satyaki and Yuyutsu. These were the 8 warriors on the Pandava side. On the Kaurava side, only 3 survived. So, 8 plus 3, 11. Okay? So, whatever way you look at it, whether 7 or 11, The question here is that massive amounts of people lost their lives on the battlefield. The whole families, many families were wiped out totally. All because of what? One person's ego, greed, and not wanting to back down. So this is what the Mahabharata war is going to teach us about, right? How destructive can the ego be? So here is now Duryodhan in verse number 10. He's saying that army of the Pandavas is more well equipped, it is more sufficient, ours is insufficient. Now, as Duryodhan is ranting and ranting and ranting, what do you think is happening to his Kaurava side? He is already losing his confidence. He is telling all this to Dronacharya. The people around him are all listening to all this. What do you think is happening to the rest of the warriors? They themselves are losing their confidence. They themselves are also getting depressed. The head of the army itself is getting depressed. What is going to happen to the morale of the rest of the army? So now a very important verse comes in here. Very important verse is this verse number 12. This is what we call the turning point is coming here. Why we call this the turning point? Because Bhishma Pita, who is now standing on the side of the Kauravas, realizes that he has to stop this person, Duryodhan, from ranting on and on, because he's going to demoralize the whole army. So Bhishma Pita does two very important things here. The first thing he does is, he roars like a lion. Simhanadam. Simha, you know the Vasa Malaysia word Simha, is lion. It's taken from Sanskrit Simha, which means lion. Simhanadan, he roared like a lion. So why did he roar like a lion? Why did Bhishma Pita roar like a lion? To cheer up this Duryodhan. You know, this fool, he says, is ranting on and on. Better I stop him before he demoralizes the whole army. So in order to cheer him up, he roars like a lion. That is one significant point. The next significant point is, he blew his conch. Sankham Datma Pratapavan. Sankham is the conch, Sankha. He blew the conch. So blowing the conch is a very, very important step in this war. What does blowing the conch signify? You are ready for battle. So who is the one who is the aggressor in the battle now? The Kauravas. This is same as in a modern day warfare, when the first person fires the first shot, it means they are ready for war, they are not going to back down, there is no more talk, there is now only fight only. So it must be very much remembered that it is not the Pandavas who are the aggressors, it was the Kauravas who were the aggressors, who wanted to go ahead with this war at any cost. In fact, if you remember, Krishna was sent to negotiate for peace, but it didn't work out. The Kauravas didn't want to listen. Right? Then you also know the story of Duryodhan and Arjun, who went to see Krishna for his support. You all know the story, right? I hope most of you know that. How many of you do not know the story? Do not know? Only two of you? Rest of you know the story? Three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Okay, how many of you know the story?
I think I know.
Okay, most of you know. So, just to cut a story short, Arjuna and Duryodhan went to see Krishna for his help in the war. Right? Krishna was sleeping, and when Arjun came, where did he sit? At the feet of Krishna. Where did Duryodhan sit?
At the head.
So when Krishna woke up, who does he see?
Arjuna
first. So he says, I can offer you my help in battle by two ways. One of you take my army, which means one whole Akshoni. That's why Duryodhan only had 10 Akshoni. And one of you will have me, Krishna, standing on your side. But my deal is, I will not raise a weapon, I will not fight. I will only stand on your side. So, since he says, I saw Arjuna when I first opened my eyes, I will give him first choice. Duryodhan said, I am finished. He will take the army. But what did Arjuna take? Krishna. And what did Duryodhan take?
The army.
So here also is a very significant lesson which we are going to learn from here, that one is in the human field, one is our self-will, our effort is very important. See, many people say, my whole, my horoscope is already written, no matter what I do, I'll always be a failure, whatever effort I put, it's already written on my head that I'm going to fail. So why should I put any effort? Whereas the Bhagavad Gita says what? Stand up and fight. Fight your battles. Okay, one is I have to put in my effort. What is the second thing?
God's grace.
I must also invoke God's grace. So two things are very important. I must also do my part. I must do my action and surrender and seek God's grace. So what do we mean by surrender? When you tell people, they say, but you say surrender everything to God. I mean, why should I do anything? Everything I surrender to God. I sleep in my house. God, you send pizza to my house. So what is surrender then? See, surrender your action means why should I do action? What are you going to surrender? You don't surrender your action, you surrender the results of the action. Krishna is not saying surrender your actions to me. He is saying surrender the result. In the very crucial verse which we are going to come to in chapter 2, which is the foundation of Karma Yoga, chapter 2 verse 47, he says, Karma nevadikaraste, your right is to duty, your right is to work. Don't say you don't want to do anything. You do your duty. But karma nevadikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. You have no right to the result of the action. That you leave it to me. So you don't surrender your action. You surrender what? The result of the action. So when there is effort, when there is the grace of God, in the concluding verse of the Gita, Sanjaya says, if you go to chapter 18, verse 78, the concluding verse of the Gita, Sanjaya puts it so beautifully when he says, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishno, wherever there is Krishna, the Lord of Yoga, which means what? When I invoke the grace of God, when we come here, how do we start the class?
Prayers.
Huh? We do prayers. Why do we do prayers? We invoke the grace of God so that this class will be successful. So here Sanjaya is telling, concluding verse, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, when I invoke the grace of God, and Yatra Partho Danudara, where there is Arjuna, Partha is another name for Arjuna, where there is Partha, but what type of Partha? We saw in chapter 1 that the Partha Arjuna who dropped his bow and arrow and told Krishna, I will not fight. At the end of chapter 18, we see Partho Danudara, which means what? The one who has picked up the bow and arrow and is ready to face the challenges of life. Who is ready to do his duty. So that means where you get up, take up all the challenges of your life and you invoke the grace of God, when there is a combination of these two, Sanjaya says, assured is there victory, sound policy, success and dharma. So where there is God invoked and where there is effort, willpower, then all the right factors are there. Right? So we must remember this both very much. So here now in verse number 10 here, 12, now Bhishma Pita has blown the conch. Now, when the Kauravas hear Bhishma Pita blow the conch, what do the rest of the Kauravas do? In verse number 13, they all start banging away all the various instruments. Conches, kettle drums, tabos, drums, trumpets, all blared forth at once. How many people blowing away trumpets and all that? Drums? 2.5 million people blowing all their instruments. Now, when 2.5 million people blow all their instruments, what is the sound you think? Tremendous, right? So here the word is given here, tumulo. In the last line, verse 13. Tumulo means tumultuous. You can see a lot of English words also. Source is Sanskrit. Tumulo, tumultuous. Because 2.5 million people joining Bhishma Pita to blow all their various instruments, to all signify that they also are ready for war. Now, Sanjaya all the while has focused his camera on Kaurava side. Right? Now the camera is shifting to Pandava side. Now the Kauravas have already declared war. They have already declared they are ready to start fighting. Now let us see what the Pandavas respond. So when they hear the blowing of the conches, now Sanjaya is describing what is happening on the Pandava side. So in verse number 14 he says, another beautiful verse here, he first focuses his camera on who?
Krishna.
On Krishna. And how, what is the name of Krishna given here?
Madhava.
What does Madhava stand for? Why is Krishna? Krishna takes many names in the Bhagavad Gita. You will find many times Arjuna addresses him by different names, and even Krishna addresses Arjuna by different names. So each name has got a significance related to that particular verse. There is some significance. It's not just simply Vyasa trying to show off and, you know, use so many names to impress us. So here the word Madhava is very significant. The word Madhava comes from two words, Ma, meaning Goddess Lakshmi. Goddess Lakshmi. And Dhava means husband of Goddess Lakshmi. So therefore, who is Krishna?
Vishnu.
Vishnu himself. He is the very incarnation of Vishnu himself. So Vyasa is saying that he is not looking at Krishna as Krishna. He is calling him Madhava now. That means the divine himself is present on his battlefield in the form of Krishna, which is no other than Vishnu himself. So Krishna is addressed as Madhava. That means now where is Krishna standing? On the side of the Pandavas, on the side of Dharma. So assured is there victory for the Pandavas. And how is Arjuna addressed here? Arjuna is addressed here as Pandava, right? One of the Pandava brothers. Okay. Now, here Sanjaya's camera now falls on this divine chariot. He addresses it as a glorious chariot. It's a divine chariot. It is called, the name given here is Mahati Chandani Stita. Chandani means a very glorious chariot. Now, why was this chariot also glorious, Arjuna's chariot? It was because it was gifted to Arjuna by Agni Devata. Because there is a story that is in the Mahabharata, something that Arjuna did. And because of that, Agni Devata gifted Arjuna this chariot. So it is not an ordinary chariot. And yoked to this chariot, what does Vyasa say? He says it had, what he called, drawn by white horses. Now, there is one Upanishad called the Katha Upanishad. In the Katha Upanishad, this whole glorious chariot has got an allegorical meaning. Again, you must understand the meaning of the chariot. So, what do we have here? We have the chariot. We have Arjuna on the chariot. We have the five white horses here, and the chariot which is held, the reins which are held by Krishna. So there is a whole allegorical meaning behind this chariot. So what do the five horses represent?
Senses.
Okay. What does the reins represent? You see, when we say the horses represent the senses, we must understand that it is the senses which are pulling us everywhere, isn't it? Supposing you want to see the form of Krishna, you come to the temple. Because your ears wanted to hear some bhajans or you want to hear some spiritual talk, you come to the temple. So the senses are constantly pulling us. So the chariot represents the body. The horses are pulling the chariot in the direction they want to go, right? But when you come here, supposing your ears want to hear this Gita talk, but your mind is now in Sunway Shopping Center. So what happens? Your ears are here, but you don't hear. Isn't it? Why? Because your mind is somewhere else. So therefore, what do the reins represent?
Mind.
The mind. The mind has got to control the senses. Therefore, the reins have got to control the horses. And who is holding the reins of the horses?
Krishna.
Krishna. What does Krishna represent?
Intellect.
The intellect. So the intellect is greater. It has to control the mind. The mind has to control the senses. And the chariot is the body. And Arjuna represents the jiva. Because when one chariot is destroyed, one body is gone, what does the jiva do? It goes to another body. So, important thing to remember here, therefore, the control is intellect controls the mind, mind controls the senses. But now, how do most of us lead our life? We let our senses control our life. So, wherever the horses pull us, we let the body go. That means, are you dictating where you want to go? It is like this. If you have a driver and you have a car and you get in the car and you tell the driver, take me to the temple, the driver says, no, I'll take you to nightclub. So, driver is under my control or under, am I under his control? So, right now, are we in control of our mind or is our mind in control of us? I don't know, you decide. So, what the Gita is trying to tell us is, intellect must control the mind, mind must control the senses. Okay, very good. How do I make my intellect control the mind? I know, okay, my intellect is more superior than mind, mind is more superior than senses. How do I make the intellect control the mind?
Discipline.
What type of discipline? What type of discipline? What type of discipline? How do I strengthen my intellect? Why are you all here for?
Spiritual knowledge.
Spiritual knowledge. There's only one thing that can sharpen your intellect, and that is knowledge. Because intellect is for gaining knowledge. Intellect is to analyze what is right and wrong. What is dharma, adharma. So the only way is for you to imbibe this knowledge and absorb this knowledge. So when the intellect is sharpened through jnana yoga, you remember last week we discussed, we have body, mind, intellect. Intellect has to be sharpened through jnana yoga, study of the scriptures. How is mind going to be sharpened? If intellect is sharpened through jnana yoga, how is mind going to be sharpened? Mind. Mind through upasana, through worship, through rituals, through prayers, through mantras. Right? So, intellect sets, analyzes between right and wrong. Mind is purified through upasana yoga. Therefore, the intellect controls the mind. Mind in turn controls the senses. And therefore, your chariot goes in the direction you want it to go. Right? You do not lead a life according to your senses. You have a sharpened intellect. That is why the study of the scriptures is so much important. Because it is the only thing you have that can sharpen your intellect, that can guide your mind. Otherwise, if your mind falls under the sway of the senses, it is carried away. In chapter 2, Krishna will say, it is like the barge where the wind just carries away the boat. There is no proper captain to guide the boat. When a strong wind blows, the boat will just follow the direction of the wind. That means what? When we lead our life by the senses, we have no more control over our life. So here now we have the Pandavas. What is the response? Here there is Krishna seated on the chariot. Here there is Arjuna seated on the chariot. And this glorious chariot. And what happens? Now, earlier, when Bhishma Pita blew the conch, what did Sanjaya say? He just blew the conch. Now what does he say here? They blew their celestial conches. That is called Divya Sankhav. That means each conch that the Pandavas blew, he is going to give names to each of the conches. There is a long story behind each of the conch, including Krishna's conch also. Krishna's conch and the Pandavas conch are all called divine conches. So they all have a name and they have a story associated with them. Right? So when Bhishma Pita blew the conch, nothing so great. But here, six divine conches are blowing. So we will see the effect when all the Kauravas, 2.5 million, started sounding their musical instruments, it had no effect on the Pandavas. Now we will see when the Pandavas and their supporters blow their conches, you will see what happens, the effect that happens on the Kauravas. Okay? And then we will also see the turning point of Arjuna. All the while now Arjuna has come to the battlefield very confident, ready to fight. He is very confident, but the turning point will come in verse number 20. Very significant turning point, the whole battle. If this turning point didn't happen, then I'll tell you what would have happened. But let's look at now the blowing of the conches. So, verse number 15 now. The first conch is blown by no other than Krishna. How is Krishna described here again? Rishi Kesho. What does Rishi Kesho mean? Again, there's a meaning. So, Rishi means senses. It comes from two words. Rishi, Isha. So, joined together becomes Rishi Kesha. It means Rishi is senses. Isha is Lord. Lord of the senses. Not Lord of the rings. Lord of the senses. So, here, what do we mean when we call Lord, Lord of the senses? So, the senses are five. The mind also is said to be the sixth sense. So actually, there are six senses. So, when we call Lord, the Lord of the senses means what? Huh? Not control. Because if he controls means he is deciding what your senses are doing. Power. One is he provides the consciousness. He is the one who resides in this body. He is the resider in the body who gives the consciousness for the eyes, the nose, the ears to function. Isn't it? In a dead body, there is a mind, there are senses, but nothing works. Why? Because that consciousness principle is left. So that's why we call Lord Rishi Kesha, who is the Lord of the senses, because not only does he provide consciousness to the senses, he plays a second role, he is the witness also to everything that the senses and the mind are doing. So the indweller in us, Rishi Kesha, plays two roles. He provides the consciousness and he is also the witness. That means we have the free will to do what we want. But he is the witness who observes all the actions. So here Krishna is called as Rishi Kesha, the indweller, and his conch is called Panchajanayam. So, what is the story behind Panchajanayam? When Lord Krishna was in the Gurukul, he had a guru called Sandipani. So, Sandipani taught him all the knowledge of the scriptures, etc. So, it is a tradition when the student finishes the studies in the Gurukul and leaves, that he offers Guru Dakshina to the teacher. So Krishna went to his teacher and said, what can I, how do I repay you back, Guru Dakshina? So the Guru said his son had been kidnapped by a demon called Panchajanayam, who resides deep in the ocean. He had taken the son down and entrapped him in a conch. So the Guru requests Krishna to go and free his son. So Krishna goes, defeats the demon, frees the son, and from the demon he makes a conch. And the conch is called Panchajanayam. He takes the name of the demon. So the significance is what here? When Krishna blows the Panchajanayam conch, means what? What is the significance? Victory of evil, victory of good over evil. So the sound is a victory of good over evil. So here again, all these words are very significant. Panchajanayam Rishi Kesho. Rishi Kesho blew the conch Panchajanayam. And Dhananjaya, who is Dhananjaya? Second line. Arjuna. Very important name here again. Dhananjaya means what? Dhana is wealth. Jaya is victory over wealth. What is this victory over wealth signifying? Why do we call Arjuna Dhananjaya? Because all the battles that Arjuna went in, he was very successful, he was very victorious. He came back with a lot of material things, right? He got a lot of things from his battles and he got a lot of name and fame. But very important to note, why Vyasa uses his name now, Dhananjaya, is what he's trying to tell us indirectly, that no matter how many material things you accumulate in life, when Arjuna came to the battlefield, he had a problem of raga, shoka, moha. All the material things, his name, his fame, his material possessions could not help him to get out of that situation. So it's telling us what the message, you can go ahead and accumulate. Our scriptures don't say, don't go and make money. It's a big fallacy. People think that spiritual people are only to make money. But the scriptures give us the four purusharthas. You know the four purusharthas, which are? Everybody starts with artha. Why doesn't anybody remember? Dharma. The first purushartha is dharma. Then comes? Now you can say artha, no problem. Artha, kama, moksha. So, what are the scriptures telling us here? What is dharma? Righteous way of living, which means also all the prayers, rituals, etc. that we do, which are part and parcel of our duty, that we have to do dharma. Okay? Then, kama is what? All the desires. You want to travel, see the world, you want to set up some business, go ahead. You want to get university degree, go ahead. Satisfy all your desires. Then what is artha? Possessions. Whatever you want, buy a Mercedes car, buy a big bungalow, swimming pool, do whatever you want. But do everything on the platform of dharma. Right? Righteously earn money, righteously spend money also. There is no problem on that. And if you do that, if you walk the path of dharma, if you earn your money the right way, spend your money the right way, acquire your possessions the right way, eventually you will reach moksha. So, dharma, kama, artha, moksha. So, here also, Dhananjaya is saying, what the title here, that no matter what you have, when it comes to problems of samsara, when you face the problems, all your wealth, your name, your fame, etc. will not help you. That's why it's shocking to read. Do you know the statistics on suicides in the world, one whole year? Do you know? Can you take a guess on the number of people who successfully commit suicides in a whole year? Successfully. I'm not talking about attempted suicide. Successful suicide. This is on the World WHO website. You can see the statistics there. Take a guess. What? One suicide every second. How much is that in a year?
Per
day? Per year? 800,000 suicides a year. And by committing suicide, the scriptures say, we are not running away from the problem. The karma is going to follow you in one way or the other. You run away from this karma, you take another birth, what do you think that karma is going to do? It's going to follow you again. So, yet with all and many famous names, you can read through history, people who had name, fame, riches, also committed suicide. So, here the word Dhananjaya is very important. That means what? Lead a balanced life. You can lead your worldly life, do all your worldly duties, but ensure minimum, what? Minimum what? Come for Thursday Gita class. So, you have a balanced spiritual and material life. Okay? So, his conch is called Devadatam. Devadatam means, Datam means gift from the Devas, from the gods. So, just like his chariot was given by Agni Devata, his conch also was given by Agni Devata as a gift. So, very divine conch. Okay. Who is the third person who blew the conch? Bhima Karma Vrikodara. Bhima, the second brother, the Pandavas. Here, he is described as Vrikodara. Vrikodara means one who has the belly of a wolf. So, what is so unique about the belly of a wolf? Not always hungry.
Clifton. That's
always eating. Now, when we eat, what happens to us if we eat too much?
No, it becomes.
When we eat too much, what happens?
Bloated.
Battle of the bulge, isn't it? But the unique thing about a wolf is, no matter, it has a voracious appetite. It eats and eats and eats, but it never puts on a belly. So Bhim was like that. He had a voracious appetite. He could eat and eat and eat, but he did not have a belly. Okay? So he is called Vrikodhara, the belly of a wolf. And not only that, he is also called Bhima Karma. Bhima Karma means doer of terrible deeds. Because he had such mighty strength, he could fight all his the asuras and the evil people by just uprooting trees and hammering them. So he had enormous strength. Okay? And his conch is called, therefore, Aundram. Aundram means a huge, big conch. Because his size also was very huge. So his conch also was huge. Okay? Now, the balance three Pandavas will blow their conches in verse number 16. Then we will see a total of 18 warriors. The five Pandavas and balance another 13, 5 plus, 18 plus Krishna plus 5 Pandavas plus the balance, total 18 warriors will blow their conches. Now, how many instruments were blown on the Kaurava side? 2.5 million. On the Pandava side, only 18 conches were blown. Again, the magical number 18 comes. If you count all the warriors who blew the conches up to verse number 18, you will find that total is 18. And we will see what is the effect on the Kaurava side. Okay? So, now the balance three warriors blow their conches. Who are the warriors? Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira, the name again, beautiful name, Yudhishthira. Sthira means steady. Yudh means battle. The one who is steady in battle, the one who never runs away from battle. So he took the name Yudhishthira. And he is also called Raja here. Sanjaya calls him Raja because he acknowledges him also to be the rightful owner of or rightful person to sit on the throne of Hastinapura. And Yudhishthira's conch is called Ananta Vijayam. Ananta means endless, Vijaya means victory. So his conch has also got a beautiful name, endless victory. And another thing is, Yudhishthira is also called Kunti Putro, son of Kunti. Why is that? He is a son of Kunti. But why specifically is he called Kunti Putro?
He's
the eldest plus? Pandu had how many wives?
Two wives.
So from Kunti he got three, that is Yudhishthira, Bhima and Arjuna. And the other two warriors who are mentioned here, Nakula and Sahadeva, came from the second wife called Madri. So to differentiate that these three fellows came from one wife and these two. Yet why he wants to say that, although the five brothers came from two different mothers, yet they are united. Whereas those Kauravas, 100 came from one mother, but they are totally disunited. So here he wants to show the point also that they came from two different mothers, but they... See, there are a lot of allegorical meanings in this chapter 1. Once we leave that, then we come into the real teachings that start in chapter 2. But if we understand the gist of chapter 1, the rest of the chapters will be easy to understand. And therefore, the other two twins, Nakula and Sahadev, they were twins from the second mother. They blew their conch. Sukosha and Manipushpakam. Okay. Now, verses 17 and 18 again, a number of warriors on the side of Pandavas are mentioned. Again, it is not necessary for us to go and understand all these warriors, but very important to understand that after these 18 warriors all blew their respective conches, what happens in verse number 19? Now, you remember the word Tumalo. When the Kauravas blew all their conches, drums, etc., what was the noise described as?
Tumultus.
Now look at verse number 19. When the 18 Pandavas blew their conches, how is the noise described as? Also tumultus. But the difference is this now. When the Kauravas blew their conches, there was nothing happened to the Pandavas. Now when the Pandavas blow the 18 conches, what is the effect on the Kauravas? It says here, it pierced the hearts of Dhritarashtra's supporters. Now why should 18 conches terrify the Kauravas? And this sound of 18 conches, not it went all the way through earth, that means it vibrated through earth, it rumbled through earth and it rumbled through the sky. That is what is mentioned here. Just beautiful 18 conches blowing, the sound penetrated all the way through the sky and the earth. That means all the Kauravas heard it. It brought fear to their hearts. Why is that? That's what it says. It rent the hearts of Dhritarashtra's supporters.
It was blown by good people, divine people.
Now imagine all of you are sitting here, you hear the sound of a police siren come. Are you disturbed?
No.
Supposing one of the person here is a crook, just robbed somewhere, came here to seek asylum. He hears a police siren. What do you think is going to be the condition of that person?
Guilt.
Guilt, isn't it? Guilt. Although the police car might have come for some other reason, but the guilt is there. So even in us, the sound of consciousness is there. The problem is what? It is warning us, telling us, don't do this. But yet we do not listen. So although the fear was there, when they heard this divine conscious blown, it struck their very hearts, but they still didn't want to listen. They still wanted to go ahead with the war. And now comes a very critical point. In verse number 20, the word Atha is a very, very, very important turning point in this whole Mahabharata war. If this word Atha didn't happen, you all won't be sitting here listening to me. So, what we'll do is, we'll come back next week and understand the whole turning point. That's how the whole Gita came about, because of this very one word, Atha. Okay? So, I'll stop the class here. Now, I was also told that there are people who want to ask questions but are not confident enough to ask questions in front of the whole class. So, I'll make it easy for you all. Write it on a piece of paper and just leave it here. And so, if there are questions, in every class, we can just take up one or two questions. Okay? Don't ask questions about stock market or how to predict lottery numbers and all that. So, questions about Bhagavad Gita, anything you have, please write down and just leave it. We will try to address one question or two questions every week. Okay? Yeah.
You mentioned the word Gita.
So Gita.
Gita. E-T-H-E-R.
The five elements.
Oh, Gita. Gita. Yes. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, in English, Gita is different. Isn't it?
It's space. Actually, it is space. That means.
Okay, what does it mean?
Not the gas. Gita, yeah, gas. Okay, is that what you're referring? Yeah. Gita here refers to space, the most subtle. Space. So that's
actually,
how
my knowledge
in science, is it?
It's little in science, or even in religion. Energy is the starting of an element, the smallest thing, which becomes huge in various forms.
Okay.
Shakti.
Shakti. So it starts with energy.
Energy.
You see, the thing is, where did all this come from? It had to come from one Shakti itself.
Yeah.
Right? But in later in the chapters, we are going to be told there is this lower Prakriti which is created, and then consciousness entered and penetrated this lower Prakriti and energized it.
Through energy, everything can be virtually everything.
Everywhere, all pervading.
Through the, they say, Prabhanjam, whole Prabhanjam is made out of energy.
Energy, okay. The underlying factor is energy. Right. Yes?
Will we ever get a chance to recite the verses?
You mean each verse? The thing is, we have tried this before in the classes here, but then I don't know whether many students are interested. We can recite, but it's going to slow down our classes, and I don't know whether everybody is interested. So what we normally do is we recite the chapter 12. If we can learn to start at least reciting chapter 12, then if you want to learn more recitation, Panditji also conducts Sanskrit classes here also. And when we conduct the 18, when we conduct the Havan Yajnas, we recite all the 18 chapters. And also on every Purnima day, the whole 18 chapters are recited. So you can come, listen, participate and try to recite.
Sunday.
Right? Sunday. So, sorry? Sundays. Yes, Sundays also we recite 7 verses. We go 7 by 7 verses. So the Panditji recites the verses in Sanskrit. You can come and listen and participate in the recitation also. So here we must understand we cannot do too many things. Our main objective in these classes is to focus on the verses and the knowledge. So there is also other things like recitation and all which you can come on Sundays and also attend the Havans and also attend the Purnima readings. You can catch up the readings from the recitation. So there are no questions, we will end the class.
Vasudevasutam devam kansa chanuramardanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagadguru.
Thank you. You know, I noticed when you put the record.